So, first of all, maybe it's because of the weather, maybe just because we're getting there, but there's an incredible excitement that we have when Pesach is coming, and it should be an excitement. The experience of every Pesach that we grew up with or that we've hosted over the years is something that really should get us excited. The Pasuk in Shir HaShirim says, Kol dodi hinezeba, the voice of my beloved, I hear it coming, midaleg al heharim, skipping over the mountains, mikapetz al hagvaot, dancing over the foothills. And that's, of course, a Pasuk from Shir HaShirim, which will be our topic over the next 4 weeks, to really try to understand this Megillah, the Megillah of Shir HaShirim. But it's also, in my mind, a metaphor, not just for the in the story of Shir HaShirim, for the beloved, the voice of my beloved, I hear it coming, but the metaphor that I'm using it for is, of course, we hear Pesach coming, and that comes with its own amount of excitement. So,
I wish that were true for you.
What's that?
I wish that were true for you.
Oh, no, I feel Pesach very excited about Pesach.
Literally.
Oh, the literal meaning. Ah, thank you very much. Hi, Tova, how are you? So the story of the Megillah of Shir HaShirim is a well-documented one. Shir HaShirim, of course, what's the basic theme of Shir HaShirim? It's a short chapter. So it's a love story on the literal level between a man and a woman.
Right.
And it's not just a regular love story. Every love story is unique, right? Every relationship is unique. Every love story is unique, even if there are some common themes, right? Common themes, I liked him, he didn't like me, or I liked her and she didn't like it. Yeah, there are common themes, but every story is unique. So Shir HaShirim is really a unique love story, and Arthur already is going to the metaphorical level, which of course is true, that there is an aspect of the way that Chazal understood it, the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, but on the most basic level, it's a love story. And it's a kind of love story which is not a simple love story. What do I mean by that? What happens in this story?
The girl is in love with her boyfriend, and King Solomon wants her to love him, and she doesn't.
Right, so there's it's a little bit of a complex situation, right? Because the story is told in the Megillah of how, at least at one point, the beloved comes to the door, and he starts knocking on the door, and you have this amazing scene where she's inside, and she wants to open the door. She loves him, but she won't open the door. And then she finally says, "Oh my God, that was a really bad idea. Why didn't I open the door? He might go somewhere else." And she goes and opens the door, and he's gone. And this happens over and over again. And we have this constant, almost hide-and-seek imagery throughout Shir HaShirim. The dod is seen, Meitzitz min hacharakim. He's peeking through the cracks, but then as soon as she looks to find him, all of a sudden he's gone again. So it's this very complex love story, almost an unrequited love story. Even the last pasuk of the Megillah, Birach Dodi, right? My love, Birach means to run away, right? Birach Dodi v'domelech al tzvi ol ofer hayalim al harev v'samim. So the idea, al harev vaser, is in the other pasuk, is that there's this kind of tension between people who feel very strongly about each other but have a hard time getting on the same page. That's the basic story of Shir HaShirim. Of course, we'll get to the fact that it's an allegory in just a little bit. In terms of Shir HaShirim being canonized, anybody familiar with the controversy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there was... Dana, please, go ahead.
It's like in Masachek and Dain or something?
Very good, yeah. The first source,
wow.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Nicely done.
Yeah. So Rabbi Akiva, people were like, oh, you can't have this, it's too, explicit, or whatever the word is, and then Rabbi Akiva said, like, no, it's quoted to Russian, you should definitely have it in the canon.
Right, so
maybe
that
I didn't say it.
No, you said that perfectly. You combined two different Gemaras, but the basic point is true, is that there's evidence in the Gemara that Shir HaShirim originally wasn't published because it was seen as a little bit explicit. Dana used exactly the right word. But then But then it was not only accepted, but here you have, as Dana mentioned from the Mishnah, Masachas Yadayim, there was a controversy surrounding the status of Shir HaShirim. Is it going to be considered one of the Sifrei HaKodesh or not? And Rabbi Akiva says the following, if you just take a look at source 1. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, Lo Nachlok Adam Yisrael Al Shir HaShirim, that anybody could challenge the standing of Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is literally unassailable. Shalot Tatame is Hayadayim, that it shouldn't be whether something or not contaminates the hands is a referendum on whether it's one of the Sifrei Kodesh, one of the canonized books. She'ein kol ha'olam kulo kedai, kiyom shenisan bo shir hashirim liyisrael. The entire world is only worth it for the day that the Jewish people received the Song of Songs. This was the day that justified all of creation and all of humanity. That's a pretty resounding book review. Right? You can imagine, yeah. The New York Times book review, some book came out and somebody wrote about this book. The day this book was published justified the existence of the planet and all of the crimes of humanity up until this point. Right? So, you know, that would be a massive claim. Right? Very difficult to justify. But anyway, that is precisely what Rabbi Akiva says. She'ein kol ha'olam kulo kedai ki yom shenisan bo shir hashirim liyisrael shekol ksuvim kodesh. All of the books of Tanakh are sanctified v'shir hashirim, but the Song of Songs kodesh kadashim, that is holy of holies. And then we have another source, the Medrash, the second source just mentioned outside, that there were 10 classical songs throughout world history. There was a song of Adam, and there was a song of Avram, and there was a song of Moshe, and there was a song of the Jewish people, and there was a song of David, and then there will be a song in the future, La'asid Lavo, in the days of Mashiach, and then a song in Olam Haba, and then there's Shir HaShirim. And Shir HaShirim is the greatest of all of the songs, including the song of the Olam Haba. We call it, if you just take a look here at the end, V'shir HaShirim Mishubachas Mikulam. Shir HaShirim is most elevated over all of the songs. So again, Shir HaShirim went from being in a challenged state, where it wasn't readily accepted, to the point where it was being called Kodesh Kadashim, over and above any of the other Sifrei Tanakh, and it's considered the greatest song of all time, right? Greater than Adam's song, greater than Avram's song, greater than even the Shira on the Yam Suf, right? The Az Yashir. Shir HaShirim Mishubachas Mikulam, Shir HaShirim Shavach Shavachim, okay? Etc., etc. So, of course, the Shir HaShirim is given a singular place in our tradition, which is why it's so important for us to study it. The minhag of the Jewish people is to read Shir HaShirim on Pesach, and I would like to spend tonight's shir trying to answer this one basic question. Now, why should it be Shir HaShirim, a love story, a complex love story, as we said, a love story with ups and downs and ons and offs, if you can say such a thing? Why would it be appropriate to read this on Pesach? What themes of Shir HaShirim seem to work well with Pesach? Yes? Okay, good. Good, good, good. So that's exactly right. So maybe it does go back. Maybe there's something about the story of Pesach, specifically our leaving Egypt and going out into the desert, which does speak somewhat to the themes of Shir HaShirim. Excellent point. We'll return to that. Any other suggestions? Arthur?
Does it even precede the Exodus, our whole existence in Egypt?
Okay, good. Go ahead.
I mean, the whole thing that, you know, where was God? You know, the whole, you know, if he loved us so much, why the torture in Egypt? You know,
right.
It was like a love-unlove situation.
Ah, very good. So everybody pick up on what Arthur is saying, is that maybe part of the up-and-down story of Shir HaShirim, how the lovers have a hard time getting on the same page, that corresponds maybe even to a stayed in Jewish history long before the Exodus from Egypt. The whole time of the Shibud in Egypt, the actual enslavement in Egypt, might be corresponding to those difficult passages which are described in Shir HaShirim. That I think is a very good idea, and that would build well. That would work very well with the previous comment. In other words, that the story of Shir HaShirim, of the ups and the downs, would correspond to the Jewish people being enslaved in Egypt and then taken out of slavery.
Let me ask you a question. Historically,
yes.
When did this come into the religion?
So
what brought it into?
The predominant view within Chazal is that Shir HaShirim was authored by Shlomo, because of course it says Shir HaShirim Asher Li Shlomo, that Solomon the son of David was the author of Shir HaShirim, and then after he first published it, then it was for a number of generations, three or four generations, let's say, people weren't sure exactly what to do with it, but then three or four generations after Shlomo, it was incorporated into the canon. There's some body of evidence, including in the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli and Bava Basra, that Shir HaShirim was Shlomo's work, but he was drawing on earlier sources that had been developed in previous generations. There's one comment here, for example, Irving correctly points out, V'chamim Omri Mehar Sinai Nisna. There are other midrashim which say that this song was sung by the angels on the seventh day of Pesach. There's some evidence to suggest that Hashem himself sang this song at some point. So, again, as Irving pointed out, that's one of the lines here from the Medrash Zuta. So, it was compiled by Shlomo. Most of the material we assume is originally his. There may have been some earlier material, according to some views, and then it was accepted three or four generations later. So certainly within the time period of Bias Rishon, of the first Commonwealth.
And that's when they included in the...
Yes, that would be 100 years after Shlomo would be when it was incorporated. Okay, so any other suggestions? Just to make sure that we took all the comments regarding why we would read Shir HaShirim on Pesach. The themes of Shir HaShirim and the themes of Pesach. So I think this is actually a really, just an incredibly rich topic. There's one suggestion made by the Abu Draham. The Abu Draham, if you take a look at this inside, if you're interested in source 4, says that the connection is a rather tenuous one. The first chapter of Shir HaShirim includes a reference to God's war against Pharaoh and the Egyptians on Yam Suf. L'susasi b'richvei paro demisich rayasi, which literally means God fought the chariots, the cavalry of Paro at Yam Suf, and he was able to quiet the concerns of the Jewish people. So because of this tangential reference to Shir HaShirim in the first battle at Yam Suf in the first chapter, therefore we read this Megillah on Shir HaShirim. So the Abu Draham has a fairly technical, tenuous connection, not a particularly ambitious thematic connection, but he says, look, the battle at Yam Suf, the battle against Paro, is mentioned in Shir HaShirim, so this is a good opportunity to read this Megillah. But, in my view, it goes much deeper than that. The Das Mikra, which is right over here, just above where Sil is sitting, everybody see the white books, has, in the introduction, I actually should have put in the fellow's name who wrote the introduction to the Shir HaShirim, has a remarkable theory. He says if you pay very careful attention to the liturgy on Pesach in general, there's quite a remarkable trend of how many songs we reference. Of course, on the seventh day of Pesach, we read what's our Kriyas HaTorah for the seventh day of Pesach? What do we read? Az Yashir. And then in the Haftorah of that day, we read about David's song when he was saved from the hands of Shaul. So that's two songs right there. During the Pesach Seder, we have, of course, Hallel, a third song. Many people have the custom on Pesach night, even before you start the Seder, people stay in Shul and recite Hallel then. That would be a fourth song. And so the fact that there's Shir HaShirim would just be a fifth song. And then, of course, on the last day of Pesach, he says we have the sixth song, which comes from the Navi Yeshayahu, Od Hayom Benov Lamod. The Das Mikra at least refers to that as a song. So he just says, you know, this is really a holiday of song, if you think about it. The liturgy emphasizes song on Pesach. Now, why should that be true? Anybody, he doesn't suggest a theory. I think there's an obvious one. Dana?
Like freedom?
Exactly, right? That liberty itself, the experience of salvation and liberty, liberation, that gives almost an organic rise to song. You can imagine, people who are freed, there are no words that could possibly contain that experience. Does anybody in their right mind think that the experience of being saved, liberated, can be captured in prose? Impossible. But song, perhaps a better vehicle. I'm sure there's part of that emotion that's totally inexpressible. That's why a number of people have suggested that how is the Shira, the Az Yashir, written in the Torah? The Az Yashir is written...
Like poetic stanza?
Exactly. So the Az Yashir, normally the way that we write the Torah is, you know, you have black letters on white parchment and you write, you know, in very clear columns. But the Az Yashir is written a few words, space. A few words, space. It looks like bricks, okay? And a number of the commentators suggest regarding that unusual structure is that the spaces correspond to those feelings which could never be expressed.
Or it looks like the sea.
Right. Oh, that's actually I never heard that. That's actually a beautiful idea. If you would look inside, you would hear what Dana was saying, is that it kind of looks like a moving body of water. But in any event, whether or not you believe song can express the feelings that one has upon liberation, it's clear that there are no regular speech could not. So the idea of Pesach as the holiday, which incorporates into the liturgy a greater percentage and proportion of songs than any other holiday, is the approach that Das Mikra takes. Again, it's not saying the specific theme of Shir HaShirim as a love song relates to Pesach, just the fact that it's a song. Okay, so this is a little bit more thematic than the previous explanation. Again, the previous explanation that we saw is it's totally tangential. The fact of the matter is that Paro is mentioned in the first parak, Hashem's battle against Paro. This is slightly more conceptual because it says it's a song, and songs have a special place on Pesach because Pesach is a holiday of liberation, of celebrating our liberation from Egypt. But these two approaches, I would say, are the least ambitious approaches. What I want to try to devote the rest of our time together on are what I consider to be incredibly meaningful perspectives which bring together Pesach and Shir HaShirim. We take a look at the Rambam. The Rambam in Source 5 notes the following. This is the Rambam's discussion of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. Again, we'll read it in the Hebrew, but every single word will be translated to the English. Ketzad hi ahava haru'uya. What is the proper way to love the Almighty? Who? Sheyahov es Hashem ahava gedola yisera. To love God in overwhelming and overpowering love, azam me'od, incredibly strong, ad shetehei nafsho kishura be'avas Hashem, to the point where one's soul is bound to the love of God, v'nimtza shoge ba'tamid, to the point where one is obsessively involved, at least intellectually, internally, with this sense of love of the Almighty. Right, what we call that ki'ilu chole chole ha'ava, a person who's lovesick. She'ein da'aso penuya me'avas osa'isha. When somebody falls in love, a man with a woman or a woman with a man, we simply can't get the beloved out of their mind. The Rambam is comparing the love that we're meant to feel for the Almighty, that's avas Hashem, to the almost obsessive, overpowering love between man and woman. V'hu shogeba tamid, and he is again totally involved. This is the second time the Rambam used that expression. He is perpetually thinking about this person in a ubiquitous manner. Bein b'shifto, bein b'kuma, whether he's sitting or standing. Bein b'shashu ochal b'shosa, whether he's eating or drinking. That's the Rambam's paradigm. So the paradigm for love of God is the love between man and woman. Yeser mizetia avas Hashem, belev ohavav, even greater, transcending the love that one would feel for a woman, or vice versa, should be the love that one feels for God. Yeser mizet, even above and beyond this, a remarkable statement. Then for the third time, the Rambam uses this expression, shogin batamid, one should be constantly involved in it. Kvosh shivanu, as we've been commanded in the Shema, b'chol levavcha, with all of your heart, u'v'chol nafshecha, with all of your soul. V'hu sheshlomo amar, and this is what Solomon said, derech mashal, in the words of a parable, ki cholas ahava ani, for I am sick with love, I am lovesick, in the Shir HaShirim. V'chol Shir HaShirim mashal hu l'inyin zeh. So, if you want to understand what Shir HaShirim is, and this is what Arthur told us, Arthur was following the view of the Rambam, that Shir HaShirim should be interpreted as a parable, as a mashal, for the unique love, the overpowering love between God and His people. Okay. That is what Shir HaShirim is all about. That's the Rambam's perspective. Okay. Now, I want to take things one step further with a comment of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, who was writing the late 19th century, he was the rabbi in Nevardak, and he wrote the greatest halachic work of his time, which goes through all areas of Jewish law. And he's discussing what seems like an unrelated topic, The comportment that one should have on the Shabbos day. Of course, Shabbos is supposed to be a celebratory, happy day. One isn't supposed to engage in mourning on Shabbos. One isn't supposed to engage. That's why, for example, if a person, God forbid, is mourning a loved one, they're in Avel, we know that they're still in Avel on Shabbos, but what do they not do? They don't have any signs of mourning in public, because the theme of Shabbos, the happy, celebratory nature of Shabbos, conflicts in an irreconcilable way with mourning in a public fashion. So even crying on Shabbos would be considered inappropriate. Okay, we're not talking about children. Children cry as part of it, right? You know, I'm not suggesting that if one's child starts crying that you say you can't do that on Shabbos, right? That would be poor parenting. But for an adult, one should try to maintain something of a, at least outwardly, even if one internally is very distraught, outwardly there is a specific kind of comportment which is appropriate for Shabbos. So the Aruch HaShulchan says as follows: V'isa be'agada, it's brought in the Sefer HaAgor, she'talmidei Rabbi Akiva mitza'u bocha b'Shabbos. The students of Rabbi Akiva found him crying on one Shabbos. So of course they said to him, right, you know, Rabbi, how can you cry at Shabbos? Okay, v'amar oneg yeshli. Rabbi Akiva said, this is my delight. V'yeshmi shapiresh, and there are those that explain, shezehu meirov dveikuso v'akadosh baruch hu. The Rabbi Akiva was in a very special spiritual place. So for him, he was crying out of a sense of, again, whatever this means, closeness, spiritual transcendence, a kind of spiritual communion with the Almighty. Okay. But in any event, shekein matzino, this isn't the only time we saw Rabbi Akiva crying. Rabbi Akiva had a bit of a crying streak. Okay? In a good way. Shekein matzino b'Rabbi Akiva, B'Zohar Chadash, there's a tradition from the Zohar Chadash, Be'amro Shir HaShirim, Rabbi Akiva, when he would recite Shir HaShirim, and don't forget, it was Rabbi Akiva who said previously, what statement? Dana, you had this? Kodesh Kadash, and Rabbi Akiva is the great proponent of Shir HaShirim in our tradition, so Rabbi Akiva, Ga'a Bibichia, that Rabbi Akiva would read Shir HaShirim, he was overwhelmed with crying. Ga'a Bibichia, I wish I had the words to explain exactly what this meant, but he was shaking. He wasn't crying like, you know, he was sad. He was shaking. He was having this kind of incredibly overwhelming emotional response to Shir HaShirim. Mibnei sheyadad heichan hadvarim megiim, because he understood in a way that nobody else did what the love between God and the Jewish people was all about. So the reason I love this source so much is because the Rambam speaks about it, but the Aruch HaShulchan takes it to a different level. The kind of love between God and the Jewish people, I don't have the words for it. But there's something very deep there, very profound and very real there. The point where Rabbi Akiva, who was the most sensitized to this, he was the one who noted that Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kadeshim, when he would read this, he was overwhelmed. It was something so deep and authentic and real. What he was reading about and what he felt, Yadad Heichan Hadvar Megiim, that the ballad, the romance between God and the Jewish people, what we've gone through over all the centuries, with all the ups and downs, and all the high moments and all the terrible moments, and the way that we persevere together, there was something so real for him there. Rabbi Akiva, who saw so much suffering in his lifetime, remember Rabbi Akiva was during the generation of the Roman, but yet was such an optimist. We know, of course, that Rabbi Akiva was the one who always could envision the future, and that when everybody was crying, he could laugh. But Rabbi Akiva had this very special emotional quality to him that he deeply felt, In a very true sense, what the relationship between God and the Jewish people is all about. That's what Shir HaShirim is. Shir HaShirim is something that could move Rabbi Akiva, not just to tears, but to a kind of uncontrollable sobbing. It touched him in such a unique way. That's the story of Shir HaShirim. So then, of course, what does it have to do with Pesach? So the Aruch HaShulchan just completes the circle for us. This is the seventh source. V'noegin lomar Shir HaShirim. Why do we say Shir HaShirim on Pesach? Mipnei sheShir HaShirim medaber al ha'ava shemein Knesset Yisrael l'abiyam Shabbat Shemayim. Of course, if the theme of Shir HaShirim, as we've demonstrated, is the love between God and the Jewish people, when did that story get its start? When did it begin? Shehaisa haschalasa b'yitzias Mitzrayim. That the beginning of the relationship between God and not individuals, because as Arthur pointed out, God had a relationship with individuals going all the way back to the book of Genesis, to Sefer Bereishis, with the Avos, with the Imahos, with the family of Yaakov. But with the Jewish people per se, when did that story really begin? With the Jewish sojourn in the land of Egypt, and then with taking them out of the land of Egypt. The suffering first of the Jewish people, And God says, I've heard their cries. Vayishma Elokim esnakasam. Vayizkor Elokim. Vayeda Elokim. Hashem knew what we were feeling, and then he came and he took us out. So, on Shir HaShirim, we remember the beginning of the love story. The beginning of that relationship between God and the Jewish people. And that, of course, is appropriate to the holiday of Pesach, because that's when everything started. Yes?
Not just because it's national, but because it's reciprocal also.
Go ahead. Yeah, we're gonna elaborate on that. But what do you mean by reciprocal?
Meaning, like, we showed up also. It wasn't, you know, through a long part of the story. Of course, I guess we cry, but he's
much more. Right.
At the end, when we go, or those of us
that
do go, that's us kind of saying, you know, we're here for the relationship too, like we're the trust, the sacrifice.
Okay, very, very good. So when we, then in the last section, we're going to touch on that notion of reciprocity, but I agree 100%. Okay, so the basic approach of the Rambam, which is adopted by the Aruch HaShulchan, is that Shir HaShirim is appropriate to Pesach because the basic theme of Shir HaShirim is the relationship between God and the Jewish people, and the first time we can speak about that relationship as such is in the context of the holiday of Pesach. Rashi has a similar perspective, but it's different in one crucial way. And it's the difference here which I would like to highlight. Rashi is operating within this scheme as well, that Shir HaShirim is basically about the story of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, but Rashi notes that it's not a simple story. As we've noted numerous times to this point, it's a complex story. It's got its ups and downs, and it's got its sense of, more than anything else, missed opportunities. So Rashi says as follows. Oh, Susan, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah.
Okay. V'omer ani, Rashi, this is Rashi's hakdama to Shir HaShirim, Rashi's introduction. So Rashi says, Omer ani, this is my idea about what Shir HaShirim is. Omer ani, I think, Shira Shlomo Beruach HaKodesh, Shlomo foresaw, through divine insight, She'asid in Yisrael Liglos Gola Achar Gola, Chorban Achar Chorban. The Jewish people would sustain one calamity after the other, one exile after the other. The Jewish people would go to England, they'd be exiled from there, right? They'd go to Germany, they'd be kicked out of there. They'd go to Poland, you'd have the Holocaust. The Jewish people would go, you know, the other parts of the Jewish people would go to Spain, right? And they'd be kicked out from there. The Jewish people would be in North Africa, 1948 would come along, they'd be kicked out from there, right? Time and time and time again. Gola achar gola, churban achar churban. And the Jewish people in the future would come to bemoan their fate. And they would remember Chiba Rishona, that those initial stages when they were just coming out of Egypt, Asher Hayu Segula Lo Mikol Ha'amim, when God said, you are my treasured people. Lemor Elcha Ve'ashuva El Ishi HaRishon Ki Tov Li Az Me'ata. This is, of course, a quote from the Navi Hosea, that the Jewish people would sort of sigh and lament in their diaspora, in their suffering, how much better it was when they were loyal to Hashem those first few moments after Yitzias Mitzrayim, before the Egel HaZahav, before the golden calf. V'yizkru Es Chasadav, and they'll remember all of God's kindness with them at that time, v'es ma'ala masher ma'alu, and how they rejected Hashem's kindness. That's the story of the Jewish people in the Midbar. V'es hatovos asher amar laseis lahem ba'achris hayamim, but they would also remember that Hashem had promised to redeem them. V'yasad sefer hazan, Shlomo therefore established this sefer, beruach hakodesh, belashon isha tzerura, a woman who loves someone but is unrequited. Almanus chayus, which literally means a woman who is in love with a man but who cannot have access to him. He's not around for whatever reason. That's the story of Shir HaShirim. It's not just a love story, but it's a love story of missed opportunity, of unrequited love, of pain, of disconnection. Mishtokekes albala, she yearns. Mishtokekes really, she yearns from the deep recesses of her soul for a husband. Misrapekes aldoda, searching for her beloved. Maskeres avas nu'urim elav, she remembers how much she loved him and how she abandoned him and how foolish that was. Umoda al pisha, she admits her mistake. And aftoda, the story of course, Shir HaShirim not only speaks about the feelings of the woman, but of the beloved who keeps on searching for this woman that he never forgot about. Tsar lo bitzarasa, how much it hurts, and in the mashal Hashem, that we're in such terrible distress. Umaskir chaste ne'ureha, and he too remembers how appeasing and appealing she was in the early stages of their relationship. Vinoy Yofyan, her beauty, Vikishron Pa'aleha, and how upright her ways were. Okay, Bahem Nikshar Ima Ba'ahava Aza, what originally made him fall in love with her. Lahodiam Kilomi Liba Ana, that he wants to let her know that he hasn't given up on her. Velo Shilucha Shiluchin, she hasn't been sent away forever. Ki Od Hi Ishto, she is still every bit his woman. Vihu Isha, and he is her man. Vihu Atid Lashuve Leha, and there will be a reunion in the future. So what Rashi's noting is that Shir HaShirim actually is not just about the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, but the complexities of our relationship, the failures of our relationship, but still that remarkable desire on both of our parts for an ultimate reunion. So that we reach Shir HaShirim on Pesach, yes, it's about the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, but what we're really doing on Pesach is we're yearning for a simpler time. We're yearning for a time when things were working out between us. It's a kind of, let's go back to the start. Let's try and find the start over button, if you will. That's what Rashi says reading Ashir Ashirim on Pesach is all about. It's searching for a more innocent time, searching for a time when things were smoother between us. And that, of course, is exactly what the Navi says in Yirmiyahu, a very beautiful pasuk that we read at various points throughout the year. Haloch v'karasa, Hashem says to Yirmiyahu, go and call out be'aznei Yerushalayim, in the ears of Yerushalayim, meaning the Jewish people. This is one of the most beautiful pesukim in Navi. Ko amar Hashem. Hashem wants us to know. Zacharti lachased ne'urayich. I remember how you were when you were young. Ahavas kelulosayich. How much I loved you when you were my young bride. Lechteich acharai bamidbar. When you followed me out into the desert. Be'eretz lo ziru'ah. Into a land that was not fertile. So Rashi comments here on this pasuk how Hashem is praising the Jewish people. You followed my messengers, Moshe and Aaron, into the desert. This is not natural human activity, right? This is the point where the mother-in-law would say, I know you think this is a great guy, but it doesn't really make sense. Trust me, I know. But you did it anyway. You were loyal to me, Hashem says, and I'll never forget that loyalty. So that when we read Shir HaShirim on Pesach, that's what we're saying. We're all, both Hashem and the Jewish people, making reference to this earlier time, this better time. And trying to turn back the clock, trying to find a way to get back to that stage in our relationship. Yeah, Arthur.
So if you want to place people into the positions of this Shir HaShirim, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. it was Jewish people who deserted God.
In the Shir HaShirim model, that is exactly the way the analogy works. So Arthur is correct to point out, because again, the beloved is knocking, and she doesn't immediately answer the door, and then when she goes to answer the door, he's already gone. So it's the Jewish people exactly who missed that opportunity. And that corresponds to the travels and the travails, frankly, of the Jewish people in the desert, where Hashem is getting ready to take them into the land of Israel, and boom, they miss their chance. You have the Egel HaZahav first, and then the Meraglim, and that's the nail in the coffin. And then everything is different. Everything is different from that point on. And so that's the analogy. So that we put Shir HaShirim on Pesach, because Pesach is, of course, that time of Lechteich Acharai Bamidbar. Pesach speaks to that time when things were simpler. And Shir HaShirim is nothing but almost a tragic tale, a tragic tale of how much we wish we could go back to that time. And that's what putting Shir HaShirim in Pesach is all about. It's a comment about our deep desire to go back to the stage of described by Yirmiyahu HaNavi as Lechtei Chacharai Bamidbar. So a beautiful approach of Rashi to understanding why we put Shir HaShirim in the context of literally that the first moments of our relationship with Hashem, when we were that innocent, devoted, loyal bride, Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar Be'eretz Lo Zeruah, because that really is the aspiration of Shir HaShirim. Yes?
Doesn't it also go even further back than that? Because if we know that before we're born that we have our soulmates, then in essence, God knew that the Jewish people was His soulmate. And this is a reflection on even that prior relationship, that in spite of everything, there was always predated a connection, even before this.
Yeah, so there's a big question in general. How, you know, with the topic was raised of the kind of destiny either between individuals or the destiny between God and the Jewish people. Now, what's interesting is, and this is part of a much broader topic, I'll just mention it briefly, is that the Jewish people, if you want to date it to its earliest time, obviously you can't speak about it as the Jewish people, but what I like to call the nascent Jewish people, the proto-Jewish people, can be traced to the times of Avraham. Right, Avram is the first person that we trace ourselves back to. We're not B'nai Noach, we're B'nai Avraham. So Avram appears in Parshas Lech Lecha. So there actually can be a very strong case made, and this is what I personally happen to believe, is that the original plan for the world didn't necessarily include one chosen people. I don't think there's evidence to suggest that. If anything, the way that I think the scheme was meant to work was that all people would... are, and they still are to this day, but are meant to be children unto God. The model failed. There was a flood, and God reconfigured his plan. And God said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to contract with one particular people. That's why it's not a surprise that Avram emerges right after the flood, and that's the beginning of the story of the Jewish people. That's the appearance of the Jewish people, and God says, I'm going to model 2.0. Again, I'm speculating. This is what I happen to think is true. Right? The Jewish people don't appear at the beginning of the Torah. Everybody could have gotten the Torah. The Jewish people emerge as a result of the failure of the first world order. Then you have Avraham, and Avraham is the beginning of the story of the Jewish people, where Hashem contracts specifically with one people, and God was always planning on giving the Torah. That I think there's substantial evidence for. The question is, to who? To one people who will be his messengers. That's the current model that we operate with. The previous model may well have been that God would have given the Torah to everybody. The idea that there should be one people which is separate, I don't think is necessarily predestined. I think that's really what the story of Vayinachem Hashem al Asher Asa Es HaAdam, that notion of God changing his mind, as it were, of course, which raises questions of omniscience, but I think that's a model that's worth being open to. I don't think there's a substantial amount of evidence that suggests conclusively that the Jewish people were always meant to exist in the current model. I think that there was a distinct possibility that everybody could have been part of what we call the Am Segula. That's my view. Yeah, Arthur.
How many generations from Noah to Avraham?
Ten. Exactly, ten.
What happened in those 10 generations? Something took place. Something had to take place.
In terms of the transition?
No, that all of a sudden God, what did he say, he changed?
Right, well right.
That if he was going to give it to the whole world, something took place.
Well, I think the flood,
Exactly, the flood.
Susan, right.
But it was after the flood. Something else took place.
Oh, well,
the people.
The Tower of Babel.
They didn't follow the Noahide laws.
Right, and so God says, you know, the best model now is to go to a situation where what I'm going to do is I'm going to communicate with the world largely through one people. Everybody is, of course, still a child unto God. Everybody's created in the image of God, but there is a special relationship, a special intimacy between God and the Jewish people. Okay, so that's, I think, a very serious philosophical question which needs to be addressed, but not for now. Yeah, Brian, do you have a... Okay. And were there any other questions? Oh, there's Dana. Okay, I thought I saw a hand in that region. It was a floating hand.
Okay, this might be like better addressed later. But you're saying how, you know, people speak to a time when things were simpler.
Correct. Abbas Kalula Sayach, right.
You know, and then our relationship with God kind of got complicated. And from watching a lot of TV and stuff, right? And, you know, my life.
It's a good source of information.
Of course, right? Like, you know, things, it's kind of weird because, you know, you have this great, wonderful, useful relationship with God, and then things get complicated. And then, like, where are we now, sort of, you know? So, like, because usually when things get complicated, you know, I guess we're distant, though yearning, or it's just like, it's a weird narrative. Like, how do you think the narrative's supposed to run? Like, because right now I feel like we're distant, but yearning and remembering the past and all that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly Rashi's perspective.
Is that, like, the ideal?
Well, the ideal is
to return.
The ideal is to go back.
But what is that, like, how is that possible?
That's exactly the Chiddush.
Or is it, you know, going to heaven, or like, or what?
I don't know. It doesn't need to be going to heaven.
We're just tragically yearning forever. That's our
no, not forever.
I always wanted to like wrap up a little. Nice, I'm just like,
no. The clearly. The premise, Rashi's premise, clearly is that there will be a time when we do get to, we do go back, and that's the amazing.
An individual thing.
No. As a nation, there will be a geula, you know, maybe we've even, for those of us who are, you know, it wasn't an accident that when the Rav gave a title to his classical essay on the importance of the advent of the State of Israel. What did he call it? Kol Dodi Dofeik. Where did he get that title?
Shir
HaShirim. That wasn't an accident, because what the Rav understood was exactly this point, that Kol Dodi Dofeik, my beloved is back knocking. Right? That Kol Dodi Dofeik, Pischili Achosira Yasiyo Nasit HaMasi, that's the pasuk. What it literally means is, the beloved, the male, is speaking to the female, I'm back, I'm here, I'm knocking, I'm waiting for you, open the door, Achosi Rayasi Yonasi Tamasi, my beloved, my dear one, etc., etc. And that's the tragedy of Shir HaShirim. That's the period that we're in literally right now as a Jewish people. Will we answer that knock? Will we embrace the State of Israel? Some people yes, unfortunately some people no. But God is knocking. That was the Rav's contention. That's why he called it Kol Dodi Dofeik. So yes, Geula is possible, and that's the belief, and that we continue to yearn for that, and we continue to believe that that's a possibility. And for those of us who, you know, hopefully we say unabashedly, who are so oriented, we believe that we can also, and this is where reciprocity comes in, work to make that happen. We have the capacity to influence events, and that's a big part of the story, is the fact that, you know, the way that the Rav speaks about Medinat Yisrael. Right, it wasn't only Hashem. Obviously, we see Hashkacha in all the military victories that the Jewish people had against remarkable odds. But let's also not forget that we ourselves, especially the secular Jews, should be credited about this. Did a tremendous amount of work to bring that to the possibility. Yes.
Also, like from that perspective, it just sounds like there's a linear unraveling that just keeps going towards like this negative infinity, unless there's Mashiach. Whereas the way I think God structured history and time is there's a calendar, and there's, you know, there's like a centrifugal force almost of things that don't let it linear unravel, even if like you're going around, there's farther points and closer points and specks of u'ula and specks of closer times of relationship and farther personal and national levels.
100%. And that's exactly the structure of that's correct, and that's precisely the structure of Shir HaShirim, because Shir HaShirim isn't linear. It's cyclical, and that's meant to be the point. That corresponds to life. Everybody knows this from their relationships. You get closer, further away, closer, further away, and that's part of the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And this is crucial, because this is precisely the mistake that was made by a lot of the national religious community in Israel, is that they assumed, right, this is a critical point in terms of how we should relate to what's going on literally today. They assumed, okay, so there was 1967, there's a Milchamet Sheshet Yamim, and there can be no backward steps from that point. There can't be any hard times. We're in the, you know, we're in the Messianic Age, this is their view, and, you know, it's got to happen linear. And that's why came August 2005, the disengagement. You have rabbis who had no right to say this, but they said it anyway. Oh, it's not going to happen. They told people it's not going to happen. We're in the Messianic Age. Well, how do you know? How do you know that it works in a linear fashion? And then, of course, they were wrong, and then they made a terrible mistake. Not responsible rabbis, but, you know, leaders, at least so-called leaders, who make claims as to understand how God works in history. So the idea that there can't be any give and take, there can't be any progress and then regression, is simply against the basic structure of Shir HaShirim, and that itself is a crucial point in terms of the interaction between Hashem and Knesset Yisrael. The road to Geula is a long one, and it by no means is a linear one. Like everything in life, it comes with its bumps, and that of course makes it much more enriching. So this idea that we're stuck in any kind of perpetual distance is not true, and we're lucky. We should, we should consider ourselves, and I mean, I can speak from personal sentiment, we consider ourselves blessed beyond all belief that we were zocha to live in a generation where we saw Jewish people sovereign land of Israel. Now, we're not living in the way that the Messianic Age is described in the fullest sense of the term, but what my great-grandfather would have given to see a state of Israel, you know, he perished in Auschwitz, but what he would have given to see the state of Israel, what he would have given to see Jewish soldiers, what he would have given to see to my cousins, his great-grandchildren, living in Israel, speaking Hebrew, I mean, it's indescribable. He wouldn't understand how I could complain about anything today. He would literally be walking around like a drunk man, you know, on euphoric. So the fact that we've seen that is just a testament to the fact that there is the capacity for regeneration of you know, chesed nu'urayich avas kululosayich. It's a really inspiring thing. I just wanted to, in the last 10 minutes we have, take this all one step further and to bring this to what in my mind is a critical point. Assuming the Rambam and Rashi's fundamental approach, that since Shir HaShirim is about the relationship between God and the Jewish people, you have to trace it to Pesach because that's when the story really gets started. That's the critical junction. Now, from the Rambam's perspective, and this the Aruch HaShulchan spelled out, is, of course, that's when the story began, so it's appropriate to read Shir HaShirim, which is the story of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, in the context of Shibud Mitzrayim, the suffering in Egypt, as Arthur pointed out, and then Geula, salvation from Egypt. And Rashi had a little bit of a different twist on that, is that what we're really doing is we're saying this book of Shir HaShirim, which speaks about our yearning to get back to a simpler time, that kind of simpler time was on Pesach, right? When we first came out of Egypt, Chesed Nu'urayich Avas Kulosayich. Now, assuming all that is true, the Michilta has a beautiful passage here, which I think is an incredible insight into intimacy in general, into the way that we should understand Shir HaShirim. The Michilta says as follows, Rabbi Kiva Omer, not an accident, who's the great champion of Shir HaShirim? Rabbi Kiva Kodesh Kadashim. Rabbi Kiva was reading Shir HaShirim, Ga'a B'Bechia. He was the one who was shaking, uncontrollably crying. So Rabbi Kiva Omer, Adaber Bina Osav U'Bishvachav Shal Misha Amar V'Hayo Olam. I want to praise He who created the world. Bifnei Kol Umos HaOlam. Right? I want to do it publicly on the world stage. Shaharei Umos HaOlam Sholin Yes Yisrael. The nations of the world asked the Jewish people the following question. Lomar ma dodeich midod shekacha hishbatanu. That's a quote from Shir HaShirim. Right? Who is ma dodeich midod? What is so unique about your lover? Okay, that you've engaged in this kind of behavior. That's what the pasuk means. Ma dodeich midod shekacha hishbatanu. That you've undertaken this oath to him. Shekach atem meisim alav, because you're willing to give up your lives for God. Vekach atem neragim alav, you sacrifice so much, what's so special about him? Harei atem na'im, the nations of the world said to us, you have your beautiful people. Harei atem giborim, you have your strong people. Bo'u v'hisarvu imanu, why don't you come and join us? You'll, you know, improve our genetic pool, right? So let's make, this is what the people of Shechem said to Yaakov also. Right? Why don't we, you know, mix our destinies? V'Yisrael omrim lahem l'umos ha'olam. How can you even ask such a question? Who is our lover? Who is Hashem? Makirim atem oso? Do you know him? And let me tell you about him. And that's what the story of Shir HaShirim is. So the Michilta starts quoting Pesachim. Nomar lachem miktzah shavacha. We can only express just a little bit of how special he is. Dodi tzach ve'adom dagul me'revava. So on and so forth. He's strong. He's vibrant, greater than the multitudes, powerful, etc., etc., etc. Now, the story of Shir HaShirim is our testament, is our testimony to the nations of the world about what's so special about Hashem. So then, again, it doesn't get any better than this Mechilta. So Kevan Sheshomim, Shekach Shvachal, when they hear that this is what Hashem is all about, Omrim li Yisrael, so they said to him, Nilcha imachem, forget about you joining us, we want to join you. Shenemar ana halachta deich. This is our quote from Shir HaShirim. It's just reading it into the story. Where has your lover gone? Hayafa banashim, you, O beautiful amongst women. Ana pana dodeich. Okay, where has your lover turned to? Univakshenu imach. We will search him out together with you. We will join you, Jewish people, in your search to meet back up with the Almighty. V'Yisrael omrim lahem, and the Jewish people say, no way. Ein lachem chelek bo, he's mine. Ela dodi li v'ani lo, he belongs to me and I belong to him. Ani la dodi v'dodi li haroeh b'shoshanim, because love and intimacy is by its definition exclusive. That's the way it has to work. He's mine and I'm his. And we've been with each other, and we will be with each other. And as wonderful as you are, you can't be part of our story. The story of Shir HaShirim is a difficult one, but it's also about the exclusivity of relationship, of the most deep and powerful relationship. And what I would like to suggest is this is precisely the explanation. Once you understand this one point, that if Shir HaShirim is a love story, then it by definition implies exclusivity. And that's why he called the title of this year in the Hebrew, Himnon al-Ahava Exclusivit. An anthem, Shir HaShirim is really an anthem to the exclusive quality of love. The fact that love can only be between two people. It can't be open to the outside. That's why Judaism is so vigilant on that point. Why? Because that's why we really have to read Shir HaShirim. There are two times when the Jewish people have a minhag to read Shir HaShirim. One is on Pesach, one is on Shabbos. And what I'd like to explain is because with those institutions, Pesach and Shabbos, each in their own way, as I'll elaborate in just a minute, are about the exclusive relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. Pesach says, Havo Elokim, it's a pasuk in Tevarim, Lakachas lo goy mikarev goy, that God chose a people and said, I am taking this people out. These people are mine. B'ni b'chori Yisrael. These are my people. This is an exclusive relationship. Right? This is something between me and this people, and I will salvage my children from the hands of their enemies. Special relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people that nobody else is a part of. A special story, an exclusive story. That's so much the theme of Pesach. Sukkot is a universal holiday. On Sukkot we have korbanos, which correspond to all the nations of the world. But Pesach is a totally particularistic holiday. Nothing universal about it. What's the halacha about korban Pesach? Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. Kol arel lo yochal bo. It's about only those who are part of our group. It's really a particularistic holiday. It speaks about the devotion, the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. B'ni b'chori Yisrael. Making distinctions. Bein machane Yisrael, uvein machane Mitzrayim. And that's why Shir HaShirim is such an appropriate Megillah. Because it's not, for Pesach, it's not just that's when the Jewish people got their start, but it's about that exclusive bond. That Hashem is devoted to us and we're devoted to Him. That's where the reciprocity comes in. Yes, Hashem singled us out. He saved us from the Egyptians. He was poseach on our houses. He picked out the Jews. Literally went to rescue them one by one from the hands of the Egyptians, and then we followed God into the desert. It's this kind of reciprocal, exclusive relationship. The same thing is true on Shabbos. And a lot of people, especially the Sephardim, have a minhag to read Shir HaShirim going into Shabbos every week. Because you know what Shabbos is? Shabbos is Osi Ben Yuvein Bnei Yisrael. It's a private sign between God and the Jewish people. The Gemara says that Goy Shabbos, a non-Jew who tries to observe the Shabbos, is trespassing on our special place, at least in a theoretical sense, he's Chayav Misa. It's a capital crime. Again, it's mostly, the Rambam says, we don't implement this. Right, but the idea is, in principle, is that Shabbos is about the exclusive bond between God and the Jewish people. That's what Shir HaShirim speaks to. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li, and nobody else. And so that's why Shir HaShirim comes to the four, liturgical four, on Pesach, which is the holiday which speaks to that unique relationship, and on Shabbos, when we celebrate it every week, the unique bond between God and the Jewish people, and that we're His witnesses in this world. So what we're going to do in the weeks to come is to take a look at specific passages, this import of specific passages in Shir HaShirim, now that we have that basic framework established, that as a Megillah, what it speaks to is the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And just to review, it's a complex relationship, and not a linear relationship, but with its ups and downs and offs and ons. But in the end, it speaks to the utter dedication, Dodi Li, Anila Dodi V'Dodi Li, the sense that both are totally committed to each other for all the difficulties along the way. Rashi said that's exactly why we read it on Pesach, because Pesach speaks to our aspiration to go back to a time when we were walking together, Lechtech Acharei Bamidbar. And then again, of course, you have this Mechilta, which we spoke about at the very end, the teaching of Rabbi Akiva, that Shir HaShirim is about a love story, an exclusive love story. There can be no replacement for the Dod and for Dodeich. They're totally committed to each other. And even when those who would seek to join from the outside ask if they can, our response is unequivocal, no. Dodi li v'ani lo, anila dodi v'dodi li. This is not just about a relationship, but an exclusive one.